Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
Today we have Autumn Tanega with us, and she is a nurse of over 15 years. After spending the majority of that time in high acuity inpatient care, she more recently received a certification in holistic nursing. This was with the heart to have a more meaningful and long-lasting impact on people's well-being. She now does holistic wellness coaching and has a heart for those with chronic stress and anxiety. And the times we live in, there's a lot of chronic stress and anxiety. So Autumn, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself further and maybe tell us a little bit more about the story behind your journey from those 15 years in high acuity inpatient care to holistic nursing now.
Okay. Well, thank you, Erin. Thanks for having me. So my journey to holistic care really came through being in medical is because we care about people, right? So anyone that goes into nursing, you have these dreams and aspirations of helping people. I loved what I did. I really enjoy nursing. I still do. But you don't have to be in the medical field very long in this country before you really get a bit maybe disenchanted, but frustrated at the least with how little time you have with people, how much your hands are tied as far as the ways that you can impact people. So over those years in high acuity care, I saw really the revolving door, a lot of people coming in with a certain issue, and we would just adjust things and get them back on track to the point where we could discharge them. And then a month and a half, 2 months later, they'd be back with the same issues again. So there's a huge lack of education. There's a huge lack of digging deeper to see what the barriers are for people and what is preventing them from actually having a good control of their health. And there's nothing personal about it. Everybody is different. Everybody's story is different. And so moving into an area of healthcare or a way of doing healthcare such that I can actually get to know somebody, get to know what their life looks like, get to know what they see as their personal challenges and go from there is much more, I think, aligned with what any of us go into healthcare to do.
So there's those constraints and high acuity healthcare. And so holistic nursing is more aligned with what you went into the medical field to do, correct?
Correct.
Can you speak a little more about what holistic healthcare or holistic nursing entails? And how is it different from other nursing?
Sure, absolutely. So holistic means a few things. The first big thing would be that we cannot separate body, mind, spirit. So someone that is coming in for a physical ailment should also be given attention to the mind and the spirit, or someone that has ongoing mental health issues. We really need to address some physical things and what's affecting their physical body that might be in turn affecting the mental health. So there, it's all connected, and to compartmentalize is directly opposed to the holistic model. Another piece of holistic care is recognizing that the patient is the expert. So when someone comes to me, say someone comes with chronic anxiety, I'm going to do all sorts of assessment things and approach different aspects of their life that I know would benefit the anxiety. But if I suggest a certain modality or a certain diet change, for example, but that person says, absolutely not, I can't do that, that doesn't fit in with my lifestyle, whatever it may be, then I will mention it once and then steer clear. That's not my place to say you have to do this. So the patient is the expert is definitely another big piece of the holistic care model.
Yeah, that relates significantly to coaching and the concepts we talk about here on our podcast, and really trusting that the patient or client or individual has the inner wisdom and knowledge, and we partner with them to help draw that out and co-construct strategies to help them get on a pathway towards more healing and hope. So very similar in the work that, you know, I do as a grief and loss coach, LaShawn does as a positive intelligence coach, and then you do as a nurse. And so the modality behind all of this are kind of just strengths-based coaching approaches. So maybe tell us a little bit more about your approach and what skills you use to ensure your client has healthy outcomes.
Sure. So everyone that comes to me, there's a few things that I do as far as my structure. I'm always going to do a good assessment of a deeper assessment, I think, than people might expect for the issue they're coming into. So we might dig deeper into history, social history, family history, getting a good background on that stuff, but also medical history. As a nurse, I do want to know, if someone's coming in with a certain issue, let's talk about what medications you're on, making sure I understand that. When I have sessions with people, my basic structure is I'm going to teach you some things. I'm going to give you some education. I might lead you in things such as a meditation or a breathing exercise. And breathing exercises are actually always a part of my sessions. I always start with breathing to just kind of bring people to the space, and help them shed whatever's going on throughout the day. So I will teach you things and lead you through things, drop some education. But another really important part of what I do is then each week for people that come to me for multiple sessions, I have that person set goals for that day to when they come and see me next, and set ultimate longer term goals as well. I use the SMART goal model. So there's a very specific way of setting goals. And my big purpose in that is I'm here to walk alongside you. I will teach you things and help you on this road, but ultimately you have to be doing things on your own so that you do gain independence. I want someone to be able to come to me for, 4 or 8 sessions, whichever package they get. And at the end of it, feel like, I don't need you anymore, Autumn. I got this. Because that's the ultimate goal. I want to teach you, but I also want you to be practicing along the way. And I think, there's a huge benefit to that. And that's a big part of what's missing when people go, for example, to go see their primary care physician. They might go for certain symptoms and are told, you have a thyroid disorder. We need to start you on medications. And then that's kind of the end of it. But if I can spend some time walking with someone while they make the changes that they need to make, then it's a much more helpful relationship and it fosters longer, more, long-lasting change for that person.
Yeah, as you were talking, something came to mind. I'm curious about what happens when you get a patient who is used to the conveyor belt medical care, where they go in, they take some tests, then they say, let's give you a medication, and they're not really working alongside them the way that you work alongside your patients as a holistic nurse. How do you coach them? Or show them what to expect in this new relationship, because it's a very different relationship, it sounds like. And when you get a patient who's used to that, hey, 5 minutes, 10 minutes of, just looking at your history and then just giving you some pills and then you're done. And then coming into a relationship with you where it's, let's do this together. Seeing them as an expert is another thing that I think is different than when you're with your primary care. It's not like they're seeing you as an expert, or even listening to you. There's that too. I know that that's something that people have to learn to do to advocate for themselves in that situation. But listening to what you do as a holistic nurse seems very different. And so what is the initial reaction that you get from people who come to you that are used to not having that being heard or not having that relationship? And how do you coach them through it?
Sure. So I get that information to people before they ever come to actually see me. So if I've met someone and they find out what I do and we're in person and they seem curious, so I'll talk about that. I will do a free 15-minute phone call with anyone before starting so that they know if it's a good fit. So that's a good time for me to set those expectations and kind of lay that groundwork of, look, this is what it's going to look like. I'm going to have you set goals kind of thing. I'm not going to do all this for you. So letting people know before they ever even say, I want to come to your office. Now, that is a challenge for some people, especially, I've had people come to me for physical issues too, where their complaint is physical, but with people that have more emotional challenges happening, I have seen people that I don't know that they, I don't want to say they know they're resistant, but people that don't kind of follow that pattern very well, and they don't recognize that. So being able to say things like, I am kind of sensing some resistance to the goals that you set. I do like to, there's times where someone will be in my office, and one of my favorite things to preface something is with, I'm not a therapist, but I'm recognizing. So, I'm not a therapist, but you seem a bit anxious about the suggestions that I'm making. And then that gives me an opportunity to kind of dig a little deeper, or at least shine a light on something that someone else might not recognize, where they have resistance to that piece of it, where this is your job. Because for some people, it is very empowering. It's very empowering, and they're seeking out help where they're gonna have control again. Someone's giving them control. For some people, that is a little intimidating. They're used to, like you said, that system where they go in, they're chatted with for 5 minutes, someone switches their medication, come back next month. And so they're not used to being held accountable for what may or may not be changing in their life. And so just very, I mean, it's not in a judgmental way, but making note of, I'm recognizing some resistance. And then you can even dig deeper on that. And that can actually open up a whole conversation or a whole light to something that was happening beneath the surface that's causing all these other ongoing problems anyway. But definitely, I would say having those conversations of, this is what this is going to look like before they're ever in my office is the biggest thing.
I want to tap into that change piece a little bit more. I kind of started to highlight that a little bit, but I'm curious if you have recognized what has caused the most resistance to change in individuals, maybe something related to motivation or their emotional or physical health, because there are a pattern that you've noticed in that resistance to change. And then on the other end of that, is there some sort of pattern you noticed in that willingness to change, where people do take the next steps and why they do that and how they do that?
Sure, I think, yeah, this might be a little general, but I think where people, when I see people that don't really make the changes necessary, is anytime there's some feeling of shame, right? A lot of us run from feelings of guilt and shame, and it's easier to maybe portray a certain symptom or chase an answer to something different without recognizing our own involvement in something. And that, again, that's not said with judgment, because I've done that. I think we all have done that. But I see that with people when there's something that they don't want to admit, maybe like, I made this bad choice, or, I acted a certain way in the past. I used to be like this. But actually facing that and working through that and recognizing where you could actually take personal responsibility for that. Also, in situations where maybe that's caused issues with another person, and they still have maybe a broken relationship that has not been repaired. And it might be in part due to them. But I think it's a resistance to that feeling of shame a lot of times. That's just a really hard emotion to work through. No matter how gentle someone else might be with it, that person is the only one that can give themselves grace enough to move through it and then forgive themselves and acknowledge the truth of whatever those situations are so that they can move forward.
Do you have an example of someone who
Someone
acknowledged that need to
who
change well and how they did that?
Yeah, actually, someone that I worked with about a year ago, and then she recently came back, and she had dealt with a lot of challenges with social interactions. She just was very different from her peers. And when she came back to me, she came back for different reasons, but we kind of touched on that aspect of her life, connections, personal connections. And she, before I ever said anything, acknowledged that, I understand. I don't think the way that people treated me was right, but I absolutely understand why they did. And given the things that I did and the way I acted, I probably would have done the same thing they did. And so that was very cool to see that, like I said, I didn't even prompt that. She was able to, I mean, in a way, I was, of course, touching on the reason for social challenges, but she just outright took full ownership of that. And it was really awesome to see her say that and then move on with the next. And so I'm going to. She just did that all on her own. It opened up such a bigger space for her to grow.
Oh, that's beautiful. And for you as the practitioner, how does it feel when a patient comes back to you and speaks those empowering words to you?
It's so good. It's so wonderful. It's neat to see someone, of course, seeing the growth in the period while they're working with me, but then to have her come back and again, coming back for different issues, but to hear someone speak in such a self-reflective way, it makes me feel good because at some, I mean, that's not me, right? That's the privilege that I have of working with someone that's already self-aware enough that that's what they're working from. And I think that's just so beautiful. It's so beautiful to work with someone that can start from that point.
Yeah, to be witness to that, I think is something that really adds that fulfilling aspect to what we do as coaches and you as a holistic nurse practitioner, that the honor of being witness to that growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to see somebody else's beautiful parts that have nothing to do with me. So that is an, it's exactly that.
Yeah.
It's an
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of on a different note, moving into, how you collaborate with other professionals in the helping field and in the healing professions, how do you find your lane in this healing world, and how do you collaborate with others and refer out as well as receive referrals?
Sure. There, so as far as staying in my lane, that I feel like is fairly easy because I never want to step outside of my lane and do something that would be inappropriate. So I have no problem. I've had people come to me with a question of, hey, I'm dealing with this. Can you see me? And I have no problem saying, that's definitely not my specialty. I don't really do that. It also helps too. It's a little bit of a barrier that really, I am a coach. I don't prescribe, I don't order labs. And so that's helpful because some people come wanting those sorts of things and it kind of weeds that out. But I can easily say that's not my specialty. There are other complementary therapies and specialties that I've been able to say, for example, a young lady that really loved horses, and I didn't know that until her mom brought it up early on. So to be able to say, hey, I'm still happy to work with you, but there's this really great equine therapy place down the road. So that's really great. And knowing being part of the Longmont Chamber, I just know so many amazing people that do that have specialties that are different than mine. And so it's really great to know those people because I'm happy to refer someone out to someone that does something very different than I do.
And then I guess, do you have also examples of how to refer to you, or what people typically ask?
I'd say if any other practitioners are working with someone and the words of stress or anxiety or just feeling overwhelmed, I feel like I don't have time for myself. Definitely a big one is since I have a big heart for caregivers. So anytime you hear someone say something like, I don't think I even know who I am anymore, then that would be the type of person that I would love to work with to just kind of show them how to tap into their joys, deal with the chronic stress, deal with the day-to-day busyness.
I wanted to kind of shift to your personal journey, Autumn, and how coaching has shown up in that for you.
Sure. Do you mean how people have coached me along the way?
Yeah, how people have
Yeah,
coached
that kind of
you,
thing.
or yeah.
I think that's kind of a tricky question. I feel like along the way of just nursing in general, well, honestly, living, like, I think the journey of living this life has kind of gotten me there. I think the role of being a parent and step parent has been huge in showing me some of the principles behind holistic nursing, which might sound weird or kind of out of place, but there's so much of being a parent and specifically a step parent that is all the things we've already talked about, like stay in your lane, or I can guide you, but you are your own person. Like, I'm going to teach you something, but if that doesn't fit with you, then I have to let it be. And letting people make their own choices. So that's been huge. Nursing in general has really brought me there. One of the other areas of nursing that I have done that was really close to my heart, and I really, really love it, is hospice. And I think that actually, my experiences in hospice were really, I'd say, paramount in getting me into the holistic world as well, because that was an area where I could see myself being there for a patient and for a family and being helpful and supportive, but I wasn't fixing anything. And again, that shows up in coaching, right? You teach them, you guide them, you can come alongside them, but you don't fix anything. So I think those are the biggest areas, doing, hospice nursing, being a step parent, and trying to find my spot in the world of bio parents and husband and step parents. It's those experiences in life that have kind of shown me the way.
Yeah, I think one thing that's coming to mind for me as you were talking about that kind of connects back to what you were talking about earlier about shame is I went to this conference training probably about 10 years ago, and a guy said this phrase, and it has always stuck with me about what you shame stays the same. And so by letting shame, really take hold of things, it doesn't allow for us to really experience the growth that we have open to us and that is available to us. And so I'm curious, you talked a little bit about your journey with coaching and how that's shown up in your professional life. What also about maybe is there something somebody has said, like that phrase, like just a sentence or something that's really had an impact on your life, maybe just personally or professionally or both?
Wow, there's a few. I'd say the phrase, you can't change people, has really kind of hit me hard at certain points. And that's come from people in my own personal life, again, like in the realm of parenting or in marriage. Anyone here listening, married, and someone says, hey, you can't change people, amen. So that's a big one. You can't change people. A big one, this isn't even something that someone told me, but a big lesson that I learned, and this is a little bit of a change of gears, but it's the phrase of sometimes you have to love people from a distance. And that shows up interpersonally, but I think that applies in coaching as well, because you care about these people, but you aren't intertwined with them. And that's a big key for being able to let people make their own choices as well. So I guess that ties into the whole, I'll say, like, healthy boundaries, but recognizing, like, hey, I want to help you, but you're making your own choice, So those are big. Yeah, I'd say those are probably the biggest ones that stick with me there.
Yeah, those are really good ones. I love that
Yeah.
you can't change people. That one really is something that we should all hold in our minds when we're interacting with our loved ones
Yeah.
and people that we may want to step in and do something or and one thing that came up a lot when you were talking is you can't do it for them, right? And I think that's really important too. We can walk alongside them, but we cannot do it for them. And that's, I think, where shame comes in as well. That is such a heavy feeling. It really does keep us stuck, especially if we're unable or unwilling to look at it. That's really difficult to look at our shame. And especially things that we've suppressed, things that we have, that we've turned our back on and we are not going to look at, but they're showing up in our lives. And I wonder when you see that showing up with your patients, what is the conversation that you have with them to, I
About
don't know,
shame.
about shame?
Yeah. It really, because everything is so personalized, it's different from person to person, but I think helping people reflect back on, I'm very frequently trying to get people to reflect back on their strengths, the good things about them. Also reminding people that we all make mistakes, and even especially in those moments, again, like touching on the fact that you can't move past that shame. That saying that you threw out there, Erin, was so, that's so perfect. So letting people realize, If you acknowledge this, it actually just, you'll feel so much better. And then you can actually move through it and change. And you're not going to see that pattern still showing up in your life. So there's a lot of ways of approaching that with people. Also, reminding, depending on the person, some people get stuck in that because they're so afraid of how other people are still perceiving them. And a lot of times when we're stuck in shame, yes, we're ashamed of ourselves, but it's not because necessarily even we're so focused on that in ourselves, but we perceive other people focusing on that in us. So, a moment in time where you made a really embarrassing choice, the reason you're so embarrassed or ashamed of that is because you think everyone that witnessed it is still thinking about that every time they see you. So there's a lot of reminding people, like I said, what are your strengths? What about that situation are you ashamed of? Can you forgive yourself and then move on? There's a, you know, those conversations get pretty intricate, but those are kind of the basis of it.
Yeah, and that one thing that I did want to say about shame and guilt, the two, it's nuanced, right? So when it's shame, just for our listeners, just want to make that really clear. And how it's shown up for me in my practice, shame is so sticky because shame really goes to the person's identity and how they feel about themselves. So I am bad is shame. And guilt is I did something bad. And when you are faced with shame, that is so sticky because as a coach, personally, that is something that keeps coming up in sessions and talking to them about, what's coming up for you with this. And just having them like taking baby steps to kind of turn the light that way is so challenging. And it
There's
is so, yeah, persistent.
and it's, you're right. Teaching people that guilt, like recognizing you are guilty of something, that is useful, right? There's emotions that we think are so negative, but they're useful. Fear, anger, guilt. But it's when you hold on to that and make it your identity, like you said, then it becomes shame and you're dragging that around. So being able to recognize the difference. And one thing that I like, I don't know if you either, body scanning, but with people, I can pick out specific words, plan out words I want to use with them so that, if shame is one of those, then you can sort of, then you ask that person things like, well, where did you feel that in your body? Did that really trigger you? Is there a person that came to mind when you felt that in your gut when I said shame, kind of thing? And then you start working through that with them. And you have to be careful because you have to see where that person is emotionally. Obviously, you don't want to trigger something bigger. But being able to help them find awareness of not just the emotion, but it starts too with your body. It's, where, again, like, where are you feeling that? Or when I say that word, is there a certain memory that comes to mind? Or do you have just some picture in your mind of what shame brings to mind for you? So, yeah, there's a lot to it. And you have to be careful with how you unpack things with people because you can flood them. You can just actually do some more damage. So, you have to be careful there. And all this is too, like, I don't know how personally you want to get, but with shame, something that I really went through honestly relatively recently. I hadn't realized I was carrying around some shame for things. So it's been, gosh, like 18 years ago, I had a my only brother, my only sibling, he took his own life. And there was a certain person that for a long time I had a lot of anger towards because I just felt like that person had so much power over him. And then of course, there's other people that with suicides, you always hear people like, oh, I should have done more. I should have done this. I should have called more. And I was so good for years at reassuring people there's nothing you could have done. Like, you did the most you could. You can't stop someone from these choices. And it wasn't until truly it's been within the last year that I finally, I broke down one day because I realized I guilt myself. I shame myself for not calling more. And so You hide behind, you stuff that down, you get angry at other people, and then you're really good at comforting other people and making them feel like they're not. But releasing that felt so good. And just admitting, I feel ashamed. And then it freed me up to say, but it's not my fault. So, yeah,
Yeah, thank you
it's
for
a big thing.
sharing that personal
Yeah, thank
story.
you.
And yeah, 18 years of grief still, right? We carry our grief with us, and shame can be a part of that too, like you talked about. So that's hard. And I just want to acknowledge that sometimes we carry it and there isn't a fix too, right? Like it'll be a part of us in a certain way. That shame may move on. We're not gonna, for lack of a better word, stamp it out completely. But when we can tend to ourselves with care, right, just like we would with our clients, I think we get more buoyancy to carry that in ways that are helpful to us. I think that's the flip side. The paradox of grief is the flip side of that. The what is to come then with that carrying, the joy, the life experiences, the relationships. There's so much there. And so I couldn't, of course, sit here and not comment on grief and loss as a grief and loss support specialist, but just want to acknowledge, we can hold this space with you, and you don't have to be fixed. So,
Thank you. Appreciate that. It's good to even, yeah, as caregivers or practitioners in some capacity, we're also always learning about ourselves, right? So we can teach people something for a long time and finally realize, wow, I'm really not. I've been doing exactly what I've been trying to help people not do.
Yeah. There's so much power in acknowledgement. And we've linked that back to shame, but maybe let's link acknowledgement looking forward to values. We tend to bring up values in coaching a lot. And I'm curious, Autumn, are there certain values that you embody that really show up in your practice as well as in your personal life?
Sure. Values. And that is true. Yes, we bring that into coaching. That's another thing that I have people do in their very first session is identify core values. I think honesty is a big one for me personally. And then, of course, in my practice, again, it comes back to all this. We have to be honest with ourselves if we want anything to change, or even to for things that are already good, to be able to even get better or share those with the world, we have to acknowledge our good sides too and be willing to embrace them. So honesty is a big one. Community is one for me. I have a very firm belief that isolation is a very dangerous thing. So meaningful community is a big one. And again, yeah, that can tie into coaching and any sort of wellness and self-improvement, because when you do things on your own, you're not going to be encouraged. You don't have anyone to show you where maybe you could improve or to congratulate you where you've done well. Sometimes people come in and they just have zero recognition of the beautiful sides of them too, and you need community to show you that. So those are a couple of them that I hold personally and that definitely show up in my practice as well.
So we are very close to the coaching nugget of wisdom section of our episodes. We touch on if there's something that's coming up, like acknowledgement, shame, all of those things that have come up in this conversation. We reiterate that, and we leave our listeners with what we call a coaching nugget of wisdom. Usually either Aaron or I start, and then the other goes, and then our guest ends the episode with their coaching nugget of wisdom. Erin, do you have anything in mind, or would you like me to start?
I guess a question is coming to mind that I would share as a coaching nugget of wisdom for our listeners. Maybe take 5 minutes to just journal about what does a good life look like for you? And sit with that for a little bit, because I know we often talk about more specific concepts, but I think today I want to be a little bit more broad.
Okay, love it. I'm going to be specific. Something that's really come up for me, and I think this is because it's timely and it's been coming up in my own personal life, but the idea of shame, and that it came up in terms of people resisting change, and that shame can often do that. And I think that shame can show up as a stain on our soul. And if you think about stains on our skin, If there's a stain on your skin, you wash it and it's going to go away little by little as you wash it, but you have to pay attention to it. I would like to ask our listeners to look at where your light is dimmed in your life, because that stain of shame can dim our light and it can make it difficult for us to make changes that we want to make but aren't making. We have some resistance. So see, just take a look at that and see where your light is dimmed and acknowledge it. Start with acknowledgement. Okay, Adam.
That's good. That is good. I think mine would be when you think about those heavy emotions, it can be guilt, shame. A lot of times it presents as anger, towards other people, bitterness, irritability. Whenever you just feel those negative emotions, my little nugget would be take 10 minutes to do some deep breathing. And I recommend this for people all the time, but just do some slow, deep breathing. Try to clear your mind. And what you're going to notice is there might be a certain theme of a thought that crosses your mind when you're trying to clear it. And that's okay. Be forgiving of that thought, let it come and go, but make note of it. When you can be quiet and still for, like I said, even just 10 minutes, then that's going to tell you something about yourself. So when you have these repeated thoughts that come up, then expand on that. That might show you a direction that you need to start journaling it out or exploring what's behind that thought that keeps coming up. What are the feelings you get in your body? Who are the people that are tied to it? And it's just going to help you dig a little deeper and work through whatever that nagging, repeated thought is. And then you might be able to, or you will be able to set that free once you've worked through it.
Thank you, Autumn. That's great. So we've been speaking with Autumn Tanega here on our episode today. She's a nurse of 15 years and now a holistic nurse supporting people specifically with chronic stress and anxiety. Autumn, please share where people can find your information and more about you.
Sure. Our website is valorcahs.com. So counseling and holistic services. That'll take you to the website where there's information on not just myself, but I have two partners, Cheryl, who's our hypnotherapist, and Jason, who's our counselor. I can be reached by email at autumn@valorcahs.com. I'm always happy to do a free phone call and just chat with someone and see what it is you're needing, and whether you want to come see me or where I might be able to direct you, who I might be able to refer you to.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Autumn.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Meychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.